This is the Humboldt Chronicles.
I am the queen of everything. Gotta be high before I can sway. Light a tea and let it be. If you a viper.
Hi, I'm Chuck Rogers with producer Larry Trask. The Humboldt Chronicles is made possible by, and big thanks to, Archaeological Research and Supply, Patrick Finnegan, CPA, The Humboldt Cure, and Eco Groovy Deals in Arcata. Today, we're asking this question. What kind of world are we going to wake up to in California the first week of January 2018? As most of us know, January 1st is state legalization of commercial cannabis here in California. Of course, it will still be illegal federally, which is no small point, and we're going to get to that. We will also be including your calls a little bit later at 707-786-5946, 707-786-5946. You can also email questions or comments to us at studio@humboldtchronicles.com, and you can watch right now on Facebook Live, Facebook.com/TheHumCron. In studio, we're going to be talking with Humboldt County Supervisor Mike Wilson, Humboldt County Sheriff Billy Hansel, and CPA Patrick Finnegan. First, though, to set the stage, some estimate that California could take in as much as $1 billion in revenue next year alone on retail sales of many billions. Nobody really knows. As we do know, though, where there's money, there are lots of interests, whether it's big business, small business, agriculture, water, law enforcement, finance. To get some details on that, we go to a guy who studies these things. His name is Patrick Murphy. He's with the Public Policy Institute of California in San Francisco.
Lots of different decisions at lots of different points in a lot of different actors. Be they everything from different government agencies, water people, agricultural people, tax people involved. And then you add on to that, we have state government, county governments, locals and towns, mm-hmm. and things like that.
What about banking? How does a dispensary, wherever they are in California, do their banking? Because banks, even credit unions, have federal regulations they have to follow.
As of January 1, right now, no indication that the situation changes, which is that it's a very difficult situation. And I suspect among your listeners are a number of folks who are involved in the cannabis industry, mm-hmm. who have experienced firsthand the problems of being able to just simply, pay your people and pay your bills. Take just the act of doing your payroll withholding. It's a very much a cash-basis business, mm-hmm. and we haven't found a way in which banks and financial entities are willing to take the risk because, again, we go back to, see above, the federal government sees this as illegal. If you are regulated by the federal government, you probably don't want to run afoul of that.
And just to follow up on that, the current administration is really no friend of the state of California. So
the current administration is no friend of the state of California. They've made noises that they're no friend of the cannabis industry either. There is still, in effect, simply because there hasn't been anything done to revoke them, a couple of letters from the Department of Justice and Department of Treasury that sort of says, hey, make this the lowest priority as long as folks are trying, sort of in good faith, to make sure that stuff doesn't go to minors and things like that. Mm-hmm. Don't mess with them. But if you think about that, if, say, to take the example of banking, as an aside, my brother's an auditor for a regional bank in the middle of the country, and I said, would you take this on? I mean, check the boxes and make sure you're in compliance. And he said, why would we? Why take the risk? Unless
yeah.
the business is that attractive, mm-hmm. It's not worth it.
And the people in the finance industry are not known as being risk takers to start with.
Exactly. I don't interpret it as having any opinion about the industry.
Right.
In general, I think that this country, if you're into financial services, you will go where you can make money, but you're weighing those rewards with a certain degree of risk, and they've
right.
decided that the risk here is too great.
I have seen and read estimates as far as revenue in California after legalization and after it's all figured out, upwards of $1 billion. It's hard to estimate. There are people who say it will be even more than that as time goes by, given the increase in population that we're expecting over the next 20 to 25 years. Have you seen any figures that you trust on that?
To say trust is strong. We've played around with numbers, and most everything that I've seen has been what I would refer to as back of the envelope calculations, which are as good as you can get right now because we have so little information in terms of, you know, how many transactions are going to take place and how much product will be sold. But you can do some things like estimate, you know, kind of ballpark. You can do things where what we've done is taking a look at what has been raised in, say, Colorado and Washington and say, well, if we were to get about that much, what would it look like in California? And just for population, right?
Right.
And that $1 billion number starts to look pretty reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
I describe it to folks easily that it's hundreds of millions of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
My best point of reference is that our state revenue that's collected on alcoholic beverages, and this is for at the retail, the excise tax that's charged on them,
right,
runs about $400 million, something in that ballpark. So that kind of puts it in perspective, if you will.
Okay.
I would note we have a very low tax on alcohol in this state, and so you know, that may not be the best indicator.
We're going to be hearing more from Patrick Murphy in just a moment. By the way, while I have a chance here, you can find his writing on this topic at ppic.org, ppic.org. Joining us now in the studio are Patrick Finnegan. He's a CPA, also Humboldt County Sheriff Billy Hansel, and Humboldt County Supervisor Mike Wilson. Patrick,
yes.
Finances. We just heard some talk there from Patrick Murphy about money. What are you telling clients right now who want to be in the state legalized cannabis business about just doing business day to day, like federal withholding, paying taxes, things like that? What are you telling your clients?
Well, the main thing that I've been discussing is the requirements to have accounting records to support anything that you are doing. The fact that you've placed yourself out with the license really now puts you into the discussion of the government. They know who you are.
Right.
They know where you're at. They know the location of your grow. So you've taken that responsibility.
Already,
absolutely. Yeah. And to be quite honest, where the government's going to come to you first is compliance. They are going to come and see if you've gotten your paperwork together,
mm-hmm.
you're paying your taxes. And if you have not, there's going to be a layer of municipalities. It's going to be the Humboldt County. It'll be the state of California. It'll be the IRS. If any of those agencies find that you're not compliant on your taxes and record keeping, they have the ability to stop your license. Once that license is pulled, you're no longer in business. So I'm telling my clients, the most important thing immediately is get your paperwork in order. Do the things that you really need to do.
Mm-hmm.
If the sheriff's office pulls you over, you better have your manifest. You better have your paperwork. Take care of the things that you can control. That's really the message that I'm getting.
That's a great segue. Sheriff, first of all, thanks for being here. I know you've been busy today.
Thank you, Chuck.
To follow up on what Patrick was saying, traffic stops after January 1st. Just something as simple as that. What does a person have to have something in the car to prove where they got something, that it is legal, that it's not from a black market grow? How do you guys deal with that after January 1st?
Yeah, so anyone in possession of more than an ounce of marijuana becomes illegal. More than an ounce. So in public, you're only supposed to have an ounce of marijuana in possession.
And you have to be over 21, obviously.
And you have to be over 21, yeah. That's a great point. So over 21, you cannot smoke it in public, can't smoke it in a vehicle. So if you're smoking while driving,
same DUI.
Same driving while under the influence of drugs. Okay. So that is something that we're looking at. And we're gonna be doing some public messaging out there, just reaffirming with people this is the law. You can't have more than an ounce, mm-hmm. more than 5 grams in possession of concentrated cannabis, and then also six plants without a permit is the maximum amount you can have on your properties, and you can have in possession at your property the yield from those six plants. So you're safe if you got a pound per plant to have 6 pounds of marijuana, at your house, at your residence. That's the yield from your plants. So
is this the same with most counties in California? Because I know Proposition 64 allows for some local discretion on these things. Is this about what you're hearing from other areas of the state?
Yeah, so these are firm state laws, okay, you know, that are in place. And then each county has their own regulatory mm-hmm. Framework for the permit process. And really, Humboldt County has led the way with this. A lot of the counties are modeling their ordinances after Humboldt County. And I think we're doing the right thing here. We're not ready. California's not ready for this. I know that there's temporary permits that are being handed out right now, and the people that have gone through the legitimate process are the first in line for those permits.
Let's go to the supervisor here with the sure. same question. Mike Wilson, thanks for being here. Is Humboldt County ready, and are people just going to be able to walk into a retail dispensary, assuming they're over 21, as the sheriff said, and get what they want whenever they want, as long as it's within the guidelines that are set forth?
Yes, so for the average, I guess you'd say, consumer, that is the biggest change. It's now recreational, or what mm-hmm. you're calling commercial use, is
right.
basically what's going to happen after the first. So the ability for the consumer to, without a some sort of medical license, mm-hmm. Can go in and purchase. Mm-hmm. Of course, the retailers of the product of the cannabis are under a huge number of regulations in terms of packaging and dose and all those other things. But that's the biggest change for the average person on the street, I'd say. We're not going to see January 1st. No one's going to see some change occur that they're going
right.
to. I mean, Humboldt County has been working on this transition for some number of years, mm-hmm. at least 2 or 3 years, and is ahead of a lot of other counties for sure. But and the state is also moving in those directions. But as Billy sort of paused there for a second in terms of being ready, I mean, this is really a huge transition
sure.
that's occurring,
and it should take a transition period. I mean,
right.
do you on the board and some of the other supervisors? I assume you're expecting some transition period, and there'll be things to be worked out over time.
Oh, it's currently, I mean, every step you take has some sort of controversy,
yeah.
has some sort of person or group that's happy or unhappy with mm-hmm. the moves that you're making, and all of it has some unforeseen consequences, everything you do in it. It's, we as in Humboldt County we have a bit of PTSD, culture and drug war for 30 years. Mm-hmm. So we have some internal issues that we have in terms of how we view each other in this transition. And then, then there's just the legal parameters. Mm-hmm. And, there are many people like myself who've talked about, legalization as a thing that we should do, because it was immoral to have people in jail for this, but now it's coming like a freight train at us,
yeah.
and it's mm-hmm. sometimes a little scary.
And yeah. it's a big state.
Yeah.
We're going to be hearing more from you guys in just a few minutes. But first of all, back to Patrick Murphy of the Public Policy Institute of California with the story of one California county that seems not to be able to make up its mind on this issue.
I haven't checked in lately, but Calaveras County, which on one hand passed an initiative that said that we're going to tax and regulate production of marijuana and look for a way in which the county can do that responsibly and at the same time generate revenue for the county. In between there were some changes on the Board of Supervisors, and the next thing that folks knew that they were talking about actually banning cultivation in the county. So the local level is certainly where the action is taking place, and an awful lot of variation across the state. Not surprisingly, we're California. One size hardly ever fits all.
That's for sure, huh? Well, speaking of localities, one of the things that we have going on here is that we have a couple of cities that, of course, are going to go along with the fact that it's legal to have it, but maybe you can't sell it in this particular city. There will mm-hmm. be no dispensaries and things like that. We also have our local state legislative delegation who are proposing a limit
on the cultivation size for competitive reasons. They're saying that Proposition 64 does not take that into account, proposes no upper limit, and what they're worried about for a rural area like ours is that allowing 1,000 acres, 10,000 acres, would make smaller farmers, especially in areas like ours, uncompetitive.
Yes, and that notion was certainly debated around 64, particularly when there was, at one point, at my count, there was 11, I think, different possible initiatives, mm-hmm. which distilled down to the 164.
Right.
And one of those big issues was this idea of, do we limit or cap, you know, sort of either the size of the grow and then, or the size that you can cultivate, and then in addition, the number of licenses you could hold, because someone could go and buy up a bunch of licenses,
sure.
right?
And, mm-hmm.
and have more, say you limit it to 1 acre or whatever, and then I buy up 100 license going.
That's their proposal is 1 acre. Yeah.
Yep. And so that, as we know, in terms of Proposition 64, the proponents who said don't limit it, as it were, won out, and that's what got passed. Certainly could go back and regulate it by state law. The argument goes a couple different ways, and on one hand, so that you don't have sort of big, large interests, however you want to think about it, you know, big marijuana, big farmer or something coming in and taking over the industry, or some equivalent of Anheuser-Busch, if you will, which
right.
isn't even Anheuser-Busch anymore when you think about it. Somebody bigger than them.
Yeah.
And so, therefore, you want to put in some legal protections. On the other hand, you can make the argument, and, you know, I'm agnostic on this, as I am on a lot of things, that, no, there's no reason for that, because all you have to look at is, to take the Anheuser-Busch example, we have craft beers and things that do things differently, manufacturers that do things differently, that are particular to a particular place or a particular taste, that enables a smaller person, smaller business owner to function within that environment. What I can say is no one can give me the crystal ball to explain, you know, absent regulation or with regulation, where we will end up.
Well, and look at the success of the craft beer industry, you know, all over, not just here, all over the country.
Well, and even the wine industry, I would have bet that we were going to end up with, you know, I don't know, 12 winemakers in California, it seemed like, right? Because,
yeah.
you know, this entity and that entity was buying them up. And instead, yes, there are some very large producers, but they're also, you know, all across the spectrum. And with, and this would be a big difference in terms of cannabis, I think part of the reason why we've been able to have smaller wine producers exist is the fact that the number of states for which they can ship it to mm-hmm. has increased dramatically.
Right.
They aren't relying on a domestic market, or not a domestic, a local market.
Mm-hmm.
That, obviously, with the federal government's position right now, would be impossible.
We are just getting started on this massive topic. We're going to be back in just a minute with our in-studio guests. You're listening to the Humboldt Chronicles. A little bit later, we're going to be including your calls and comments. First, though, a cultivator minute with Luke Besner. He's with the T-Lab, taking a look at what you can be doing now to get ready for the next round.
This time of year, going into the winter, there's certain things you can put on, like minerals. You don't want to put on much nitrogen or phosphorus. Things will get leached out. People that are preparing for next year already, which is the thing to do, what you should be doing is getting your soil put to bed, throwing down some compost, getting a cover crop on there, adding some minerals. It's all about preparing for next year at this point. Soil testing is pretty darn important, especially for large-scale commercial growers that need to do a good job. You can waste a fair amount of money by throwing every amendment in the book in your soil, and it turns out that you only needed a tenth of what you put in there. You could be wasting money, and you could be causing detriment to the environment through excess leaching. You need healthy soil to get a healthy plant. So the goal is low cost, high output. Using the dry organic amendments, it really is the lowest cost way to go about it. And it's, in the long term, much better for your soil, because you can reuse your soil every year and it'll get better and better. And you'll find over time that you have to put less and less in there as you are bulking it up with additional amendments. This is Luke Besmer from T-Lab. If you have any questions, give us a call at 707-798-7275.
Chuck Rogers, and I'm joined in studio by Humboldt County Sheriff Billy Hansel.
Humboldt County Supervisor Mike Wilson and Patrick Finnegan, CPA. And in just a few minutes, we're going to be including your phone calls and comments here on the Chronicles. Sheriff, I want to ask you a quick question here about the black market. Everybody we've talked to in researching has the opinion that there will still be, after January 1st, a black market in marijuana in California, in Humboldt County. What kind of priority are you going to be placing on that? How much time and effort are you going to be spending trying to track that down after January 1st?
Yeah, we are going to actually still go after marijuana. Marijuana is still illegal in California if you grow over six plants without a permit. Mm-hmm. And so what it's done is the taxation of marijuana is actually funding more deputies to go after enforcement. So we actually have doubled our force of marijuana deputies because of Measure S. And so we are actually going to be still actively going after the black market growers, because these are the people that are polluting our environment. These are the most egregious grows out there that are really causing damage in the watersheds and protected areas of Humboldt County.
How do you go after them now? It'll be a different environment legally, right?
Yeah. So the laws are, you know, they've been reduced, most of them, you know, from felonies to misdemeanors. But when they have environmental impact, mm-hmm. then oftentimes they are felony crimes. So what we're doing is we are taking a multidisciplinary approach to marijuana enforcement, and that means the sheriff's office is going after the criminal side of things. Fish and Wildlife is going after criminal as well as environmental and regulatory issues. We have code enforcement that are teamed up with us that are going after the building code violations. And Cal Fire is going after the timber conversions and those kind of things that they haven't applied for, as well as the State Water Board. So we have six or seven different regulatory agencies along with the criminal side of things that are going after these illegal growers.
Do you anticipate having, say, permitted growers turning in people who are maybe 2 miles down the road who are not?
Yes. So we have 2,000 permitted growers are in the permit process, and we have about 13,000 outside the permit process. So those people outside the permit process, they're not paying all those regulatory fees. They're not paying taxes. And so if you're the tax-paying business owner and you see across the valley there's someone that's still in the black market that's getting bigger, those are people that are actually calling us now, that are taking pictures, that are sending us information and intel saying, here you are. This guy is not regulated, and he's growing, and I don't know where his product is going, but, you know, go bust him. And so we're providing the information. We do flyovers. We do drive-bys. We get the information, write search warrants, and go after these people. And it's not just cutting plants anymore. I mean, we are working with code enforcement and giving, you know, lots of fines, you know, $10,000 per day.
Per day.
And then there's also, there's compounding fines with Fish and Wildlife, environmental, that it could be $10,000 per day per violation. Mm. With multiple violations, you know, the property owner will get tagged with that big fine. And if they don't remediate their properties, then the county is going to end up, you know, seizing the property and selling it. So,
Patrick, back to money here. Taxation on, say, liquor in California versus taxation on legal cannabis after January the 1st. You and I think talked about this on the phone at one point. You have some thoughts on that. Tell me about that.
Absolutely. And when you look at the alcohol beverage industry, I'll give you a quick example. The tax for a gallon of distilled spirits is $3.30 a gallon. If you look at that, that's, let's say, two handles of Kettle One vodka that might be your favorite. You do the math, and it's like $1.65 for a large container of alcohol. Compare that to where the cannabis industry
is. Which is going to be what?
$1.65 for one of those items. And if you're buying Kettle One at $30, maybe it's, what, 8%, 6% tax?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Let's compare that to the cannabis industry. Immediately on January 1st, for any cannabis grown after January, they have $148 a pound for flower. Mm-hmm. And what we're seeing in the market is a decrease in outdoor prices. So when this tax was first discussed, we were seeing outdoor prices in Humboldt County of $1,400, $1,500 a pound. Now at $600 and $700 a pound, $148 a pound over a $600, $700 a pound, we are looking at a 20% tax rate just on the cultivation tax. we also have, Humboldt County has taxes for $1 a square foot for outdoor grow, and I believe it's $2 for
mixed light,
light and $3 for indoor. I have a client that says, hey, I just got a $40,000 tax bill for my 39,000 square foot. He has to amortize that cost into his into his pricing.
Yeah.
And now we also have, beginning January 1st, we have a 15% excise tax rate on the consumer that is passed through. So, again, and add to that the sales tax. There is just, it's just on the back of the cultivators is where this taxes are going, because you know the dispensaries are going to try to contain their margins. So it is a really difficult time period for the cannabis cultivator. They are, I think they feel under siege.
How about being competitive? Are people in Humboldt who may be growing outdoor going to be able to be competitive? Or what are you hearing and what are you telling clients?
You know, I think so, because I'm betting on Humboldt County. I think the quality up here, the culture.
The name?
Absolutely. Humboldt County is the Napa Valley of the cannabis industry. And, oh, my God, I guess you could even say the world. It's just a destination. I think we've talked. You travel throughout the world, and I'm sure people in Humboldt County, they'll say, hey, I'm from Humboldt County. The first thing that somebody in Paris or Rome or something say, oh, that's the cannabis capital. It is that well thought, and that well known historically. This is ground zero for an amazing industry that has developed. But at this point, it is facing some difficulties.
Mike, Supervisor Mike Wilson, following up on what Patrick is saying there, future economics for this area. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you guys have looked at this and thought about it.
Well, I mean,
go ahead.
People opine about it for sure. The Napa Valley, I would describe it more like Silicon Valley, actually, because from this perspective that I see, it's like a culture, it's the people, it's the technology, and the place, because it's not just a climate issue, it's also all those other things. And so where you can make design silicon chips anywhere in the world, for some reason all the folks that want to do that flock to Silicon Valley and a few other places around too, and same with cannabis.
Well, they do say that researchers in various disciplines like to be around other people of like mind, so that they can feed off of all of that creativity.
Is that what
you're getting at?
Yeah, and I think we're going to see a definite change. I mean, we're probably pretty close to the apex in terms of production. I think enforcement on the black market is going to be more than just folks, identifying someone across the valley and worried about unfair competition. I mean, the code enforcement has sent out close to 100 letters now, based on basically aerial. Satellite survey based on illegal grading or those other kinds of activities associated with cultivation. Those letters go out and the response rate is really high. It's surprising. Telling the sheriff, it seems like people are more afraid of $10,000 a day fine than they are 10 years in jail. And that has a lot to do with the fact that enforcement of 10 years in jail has really fallen off. But the level of, at $10,000 a day for a fine, these properties, some of which, if they pull out of cultivation will be unpermittable. And so then what happens? I think we're going to see land prices have some pretty significant changes too, because a lot of our land prices were based on the ability to generate income.
Right.
And now they're going to be more about the ability to generate income with a permit. Right. And because enforcement on those grows are going to be it's going to be a lot easier. I think you're just going to see a lot more of enforcement by letters and not so much by the sheriff, although they're out there doing their job. It's you don't need to do it with a gun so much anymore. It's really having folks come in and account for the land use abuses really that we're seeing. Yeah. And then basically the county, the Board of Supervisors has given the planning director, the leeway to make to negotiate with those folks who come in and say, well, if you want to get into the permit process and, you know, remediate all of those things that you've done on that property illegally, then, you know, we can talk and keep going. But some people are going to fall off that. And yeah. I have some fears that we're going to have properties that where the damages are going to be more than the value of the property. And that's going to be a land use issue we're going to have to deal with in the future.
Here's a question for the whole panel. Anybody can jump in on this. As we mentioned at the beginning of this program, even after January the 1st, this will still be illegal federally. And that's no small point. We have an administration in Washington right now that who knows what they may or may not think about the state of California. Is there a chance that there could be threats to landlords who may be leasing space to a legally state-permitted dispensary with asset forfeiture, like the building itself? Are you guys hearing anything about that? We know that there are letters that exist from the previous administration that say, as long as you're in compliance with what the local and state laws are, back off. But we have a different environment in Washington now. What are you hearing, Sheriff?
So, yeah, we do have a different environment. Jeff Sessions has postured a lot about marijuana, right, both medical and recreational. But the Cole memo under the Obama administration still stands. They have not revoked that.
It's still enforced.
It's still enforced. We talked to our federal partners, and they have not been given any new direction. You know,
so
we,
somebody in Humboldt who owns commercial property, let's say, in any town or in California, who may want to lease space to a legally permitted dispensary is probably okay for now. For now.
Well, you know what? For now, under the Cole memo, yes. You know, but the thing is, it could change at any time, and I think that's what the everyone just kind of speculates what could happen.
And of course, that property owner is going to think about self-preservation and keeping that real estate, right?
Right. And I really don't think there's bigger fish out there to fry.
Mm-hmm. You would think.
And if you look at the landscape across the nation, mm-hmm. there's actually only a few states that are completely dry from marijuana. Mm-hmm. You know, medical and recreational, they've totally abolished everything, or nothing's passed so far. But most of the states have some recreational or medical marijuana laws on the books. And so I think with the majority of Americans and their view of marijuana has changed a little bit.
60-some% now. Yeah.
And so I think that trend is going to keep the federal government, you know, focused on other topics, mm-hmm. you know, throughout the nation.
Patrick, you and I were talking before we went on the air about the prospect of possibly at some point, who knows, the federal government seeing so many states, especially a state the size of California, getting into this full bore and thinking, just imagine the revenue that would be available. Absolutely. And maybe at some point federally it could be changed. In fact, there are, I believe it's Senator Cory Booker already has introduced legislation in the U.S. Senate to get things changed federally. Of course, that's not going to go anywhere right now.
I don't think so.
Go ahead.
Yeah, and I think that's where this all changes, is what happens if there is a next administration. And I think that's what gives Humboldt County growers, cultivators, a real hope. Nobody does it better. And can you imagine having the ability to sell interstate commerce out of Humboldt County? So if I'm talking to my clients, it's let's find a way for you to hold on and get through this. Don't think the worst. I know there's going to be a lot of hurdles that have to be overcome. The government at some point is going to look at the cannabis industry, the federal government, excuse me, as a savior for taxation, similar to what we're seeing in the tobacco business, mm-hmm. with cigarettes.
Right.
There's going to be a recognition that, you know, 16-18% of the population is smoking cannabis on one time a month or whatever the numbers are, that you extrapolate that over the population of the United States, we are starting to look at some substantial funding. And nobody, like I said earlier, nobody does it better than Humboldt, and this would be a dynamic financial environment if not just interstate commerce, but shipping cannabis throughout the world, the quality that is coming out of this county, I think it would be a powerhouse.
Mm-hmm. Well, you mentioned interstate commerce. I mean, look at how much the wine industry in California makes because they can ship a case of Napa wine to wherever they want.
Yeah.
Imagine if the same thing happened in this business, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because you can't do that right now.
Absolutely. You better not.
You better not,
and,
yeah.
And that's a concern. Is anybody that's thinking that the interstate commerce play is either through banking or through mm-hmm. transportation needs to be aware of what the consequences are.
Our guests are going to be staying with us, and we're going to add your calls and comments to the discussion after a quick break. You can reach us at 707-786-5946, 707-786-5946, or via email at studio@humboldtchronicles.com. You can also watch right now on Facebook Live, facebook.com/thehumcron. Back after a quick break. First, though, a cannabis calendar. If you're in the cannabis industry or want to be, here are a few events going on soon that you might be interested in.
Welcome to this month's edition of the Cannabis Calendar, brought to you by the Humboldt Chronicles. The calendar features information on upcoming cannabis-related conferences and events that take place within a day's drive of Humboldt County. The Q1 Northern California Quarterly Cannabis Caucus, put on by the National Cannabis Industry Association, will take place at Dash Cellars in Oakland on January 9th of next year. The caucus brings together executive-level industry professionals, policymakers, regulators, and movement leaders to network and learn about emerging topics in the industry. Federal and regional legal policy will be discussed at the January meeting, and more information is available at thecannabisindustry.org. On January 20th, the Solar Living Institute is offering a day-long introductory course on growing more sustainable cannabis. The course will be taught by master growers and will cover how to save water, how to grow organically, how to fight pests naturally, and more. The course will be taught at the Solar Living Institute's Hopland location, and more information is available at solarliving.org. Finally, the Cannabis Show, which describes itself as a show dedicated to the home grower, will take place at the Sacramento Convention Center on January 28th. Learn how to start a cannabis business, how to expand an existing business, and how to improve growing techniques. More information is available at cannabisshow.com. That's CannabisShow.com. If you'd like to have your event listed on the cannabis calendar, email us the details at studio@humboldtchronicles.com.
Welcome back to the Humboldt Chronicles. Here in the studio with us are CPA Patrick Finnegan, Humboldt County Supervisor Mike Wilson, and Humboldt County Sheriff Billy Hansel. We want to bring you guys into the discussion now. If you have a comment or a question, you can call us at 707-786-5946 or email us at studio@humboldtchronicles.com. And just a reminder, you can watch now on Facebook Live, facebook.com/thehumcron. Another piece to this puzzle that has flown a little bit under the radar is industrial hemp. California's sheer size as an agricultural behemoth, as we all know, could quickly make it a leader in the U.S. market and provide an alternative crop just about anywhere in the state. Once again, here's Patrick Murphy of the Public Policy Institute of California.
I actually have a caller.
All right, you want to go to the call first?
Yeah, sorry about that. I was taking the call while you were queuing.
I was talking about industrial hemp.
Yeah, you were queuing me, and I was taking the call.
So I was queuing you. You were queuing. All right.
Let's go to Phil in Arcata.
Phil in Arcata. Hello. You're on the air. What's your question or comment?
Hey there, guys. I had a question kind of particularly for the sheriff regarding the trespass marijuana grows. And I'm really glad to hear that he's got, you know, new funding, and thank you, Sheriff, for all the work that you do in that regard. But being a biologist here, I know that that is just kind of a Herculean task to try and round up and eradicate these trespass grows out there. And I'm wondering if you think that that is really going to be able to put a dent in the black market grows out there, or if it's going to take more of a financial change with the price getting driven down. That's the most common question that I get from people asking me about the effects on wildlife, and I never had a good answer for them. So wondering your thoughts on that.
Yeah, Phil, that's a good question. And so what we're seeing now actually is kind of surprising. As the price goes down, we're seeing less and less trespass grows on our Forest Service properties, state parks, and some of these public lands and also private land holdings. That it's not enough money in it to make it worth the risk out there. So we're seeing less and less of these trespass type grows, and we focused a lot on it over the last couple of years with our camp funding, working with the state, National Guard and Department of Justice, as well as our local resources and Fish and Wildlife going after these type trespass grows. And I think we put a big dent in it, and that coupled with the low dollar value that marijuana is going for now, $500, $600, $700 a pound. It's just not worth it for people. So we're seeing that, but still people out in the hills that are not permitted, they're still going for broke. And so we still have a lot of that, on our minds. We're getting calls every day still about illegal marijuana grows, and we're going after them. Like I said, with that multi-agency approach. And I think it's going to work. We're going to be, usually marijuana was just a 3 or 4 month season. We know now that marijuana grows 365 in Humboldt County. So we are working 365 days a year, on trying to curb the illegal marijuana.
Do you have another question? Is he still there? Sheriff, is that interagency, working out there? Are you working well together with wildlife and fish?
We are. They have a lot of different funding that they get, Fish and Wildlife, and a lot of different mandates. What the felonies that are still on the books for marijuana are geared around environmental crimes and environmental impact. And so they have our own special team that's assigned to going after marijuana, and that's their watershed enforcement team. And so they have a lot of resources and a lot of new people in this position, and they go from, Humboldt, Mendocino, Trinity County, and they help out all of our counties. And we've been in recent discussions with them, and their director, Chuck Bonham, has been talking with our Board of Supervisors, as well as the Board of Supervisors around the North State, because we want to be on the same page with them.
Sure.
We want them to recognize the legitimacy of the growers that are in the permit process. It's very important. And then for them to work with us on some of these code enforcement type issues. If there's issues with a permitted grower, by all means, notice them. Let's have them remediate the issue and then, move on. If they don't remediate the issue, we can pull the permit. They can, prosecute them.
You can pull the permit.
We can pull the permit. We have, if they're working outside the law, our permit process gives us the ability to pull the permit. The code enforcement does. So the idea is, welcome to regulation. You know, this is what happens. You got to go by the book with everything. And I'm glad what Patrick said earlier. He advised everyone to have their paperwork on file.
Yep.
Be prepared to defend every aspect of your grow while we're in this time of transition.
Yeah. Larry, let's go back to the industrial hemp. It flew way under the radar. It is in Proposition 64 for sure, but the discussion was not really around that, and I don't think anybody really voted on Prop 64 because of it. But it does present some interesting options for people all over the state of California. So we're going to go back to Patrick Murphy at the Public Policy Institute of California.
Full disclosure, 10 years ago when people brought up industrial hemp, I sort of rolled my eyes and said, just say what it is you want to do. You want to grow marijuana to be smoked. however many years, 5 years of drought later, I think there's an interesting argument to be made, at least, or certainly opportunity for some folks to explore, possible applications. Everything from a drought-resistant crop, relatively speaking, if you're doing it for industrial purposes. And then I would layer on top, if you will, it's an interesting fiber, and right now there's a lot of discussion, as there is around a lot of petroleum-based things, and in this case, petroleum-based fibers, where, that really cool technical T-shirt that you have that wicks sweat away or something like that goes into the landfill and never goes away. That single example alone, in my knowledge of this in terms of industrial ag and what you can do with the fiber, is extremely limited. But as you say, that was one of those pieces, and I think you're spot on in terms of flying under the radar, got put into Prop 64. I don't think anyone who was voting on it voted on it just for that reason, or that was a tipping point. But it's certainly included, and it opens up opportunities for entrepreneurs and people with interesting ideas. And like you say, too, it could be very much for areas in the Central Valley where post-drought now, right?
Right.
Taking a look at sort of who uses water for which crops and things like that. Mm-hmm. And we have farmers actually buying land in different parts of the valley. so that their water rights are better, and they'll set up shop there, and the land that they're leaving could be turned over to something that has less of a water footprint.
Mr. Supervisor, do we hear anything in Humboldt County with all the different climate zones we have here about people thinking, you know, this could be a good idea?
Hemp?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, there are folks that are doing CBD-oriented cannabis, and some people associate that sometimes with hemp. But I don't think, in terms of fiber, I haven't heard of anyone going for that, no. I think it's something you really need some significant land for, right?
And a market.
And a market. I just don't think that's something we're into yet.
Patrick, you were aware of the state of Kentucky, was it, that has been moving forward?
I think that most of the hemp production is in the state of Kentucky. At least that's my understanding.
Yeah. Well, it could still be a good idea. One other question for you, Mike Wilson, mm-hmm. and that is, as we move past January 1st and we get into legalization, the labor market around here.
Right.
A lot of migrant workers, mm-hmm. trimigrants, mm-hmm. How do we change culturally and socially, I guess, would be the question after January 1st.
Well, like everything else, I can't predict the future too mm-hmm. much, but we will probably see some changes related to that in that, you know, legal cannabis production in terms of growing and farming, you can dry on your farms, but any other processing is not supposed to happen there. And so it would impact your license if you were doing those things. So that product will be moved off those sites and into commercial and industrial areas or wherever, you know, there's permits for processing. And so you'll see that happen. And with that, the workforce that we're so accustomed to these days, or maybe not so accustomed to in some places, will probably move with that. And so also the ability for people to hire and pay people under the table is going to be a lot more difficult as well. And I think that's something, too, that we talk a lot about the environmental laws that we're right. in terms of setting up these farms and those sorts of things. But once you get past all that, as you know, as much as they can be, they're somewhat static after you're done. Like if you've made a farm compliant in general, it's just the maintenance that's not going to change that much. Now enter a workforce and an industry that hasn't really had to deal with human HR and OSHA and those sorts of things, and it's a whole nother layer for business owners who've never dealt with anything like that before, and that's a much more dynamic universe in terms of business, and people who have employees know this, that the laws are changing pretty constantly. Mm-hmm. It's not a once a year check-in, it's every 2 weeks. And so it's going to be a very different environment from that perspective. And so, you will see workforce changes for sure.
So processing it. Go ahead, Sheriff. Processing something different.
Just going to say one thing. What's happening out there right now is as labor has become the biggest liability for marijuana mm-hmm. Production. And it's become the most costly issue in marijuana production. And so that's why it's important if people want to get involved in this and be a part of the labor industry to go to a legitimate permitted grower, because they are going to be paying the right taxes. They are going to be paying attention if they get hurt. It's mm-hmm. workman's comp. Everything there that they need as part of the regulatory framework is an employee right to have in the state of California. If you're working outside of that in the black market, you don't have any of those rights. And we've seen people work for 2 or 3 months with a promise of a paycheck, and they're left high and dry, no paycheck. And
there are horror stories about people working in that industry, right?
So I just urge people just to, if you're interested in the labor side of things, make sure it's a permitted grower.
And Patrick, this brings up a whole other question for the finance side of this. Presumably, as in any industry, there could be a lot of support businesses that pop up that maybe we don't even think of yet. Do you see people coming to you with all kinds of ideas and getting advice on, you know, how much could I make on this? And is this a good investment and so on?
Yeah, I think in the last 3 months, I have met more PhDs in chemistry than I have in my entire life.
In chemistry?
Absolutely. For the manufacturer environment, making the shatters, the cartridges, that's a big part of the business. It isn't just flour anymore. Humboldt's been known for years as the premier flour producer, but those... The cannabis also goes into other marketable items, edibles and so forth. That's a big part of the business, and that's kind of the transition. It's just a very convenient way to consume. So you have that. Certainly the packaging is going to be substantial. Yeah. The transportation side is going to be substantial. Again, beginning January 1st, cannabis has to be tested. So those independent testing labs are going to be necessary, whereas the cultivators would test to see what the pesticides were. Once it fails test, the distributor cannot release that product back to the cultivator. So these are real difficult decisions that are coming up. This is a big industry that's going to develop in and around the cannabis industry that maybe we haven't seen prior, but it's going to be coming out in the open.
Mike, is that an opportunity to bring new businesses into Humboldt County?
Well, I think it's already happening.
Yeah?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's the labs. There's people talking about bringing more laboratories here to do that kind of testing. But also, some counties are thinking of opportunities in terms of this pesticide herbicide issue. Mm-hmm. Some are considering bans on pesticides and herbicides in certain areas, so that's to protect this crop. So and in terms of, like, when people are talking about expanding this industry in, say, the Central Valley, then drift is a concern.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's possible that some of these areas that we thought to be really competitive may not be as competitive, you know, from taking those kinds of risks. Because, say, you have a large crop that then is ruined because your neighbor is spraying pesticides.
Yeah.
They're talking about, we're talking about filtering, you know, for the smell out of greenhouses here in, mm-hmm. In Monterey. They're talking about actually filtering the intake into greenhouses to make sure that they don't take in herbicides and pesticides so that it doesn't ruin their crops.
Well, we know around the country there have been lawsuits involving cross-pollination even among crops. And I
right.
Go ahead.
No, yeah, that's a big deal. You know? I mean, people take pride in that. And so, yeah, that's one of the issues that people have to be concerned about. And
who would have thought?
Yeah, and we're seeing this. I mean, I've heard, I don't know for a fact, but people say that, you know, with all the regulation that's coming, it's better just to have a clean house, a clean room, yep. an industrial building, you know, with all the filtration, so you don't have to use all of this. Mm-hmm. And so you're seeing some areas outside of Los Angeles that are being developed to grow totally indoors, to make it a totally closed unit, so you can't have insects come in, you can't have, you know, all these things that you'd have to spray for. So, mm-hmm. so it's something that, people are considering.
I want to thank you guys. We want to thank our guests, Humboldt County Supervisor Mike Wilson, Humboldt County Sheriff Billy Hansel, and CPA Patrick Finnegan, and also Patrick Murphy down at the Public Policy Institute of California in San Francisco. Larry, did you learn anything tonight?
I learned many things. I think that, you know, when we were putting together this episode, it occurred to me, and especially reinforced tonight, just how big of a deal this is, and how many different aspects of our society and culture this is going to implicate, whether you're involved in the marijuana industry or not, and what a big question mark it is. I mean, so many of the things that we'd like to know are, at this point, unknowable, but we'll find them out as we go along.
Yeah, well, like Mike just said, you can't predict the future, and who knows what's going to happen. We may have to have these guys back again to assess this 6 months from now.
Let's just keep them here.
We can do that, too. I'm Chuck Rogers with producer Larry Trask. This edition of the Humboldt Chronicles will be posted soon at 941lounge.com, lostcoastoutpost.com, and at iTunes for listening and downloading. We will be back with the next Humboldt Chronicles at 6 p.m. on January the 17th. And we also want to thank our sponsors, Archaeological Research and Supply, Patrick Finnegan, CPA, The Humboldt Cure, and Eco Groovy Deals in Arcata. See you next time.